Most people say they would like to die quietly at home, but overly aggressive medical advice coupled with an unrealistic sense of invincibility results in the majority of elderly patients misguidedly dying in institutions while undergoing a painful procedure, instead of having a better and more peaceful death they desired. The new book, At Peace, outlines specific active and passive steps that older patients and their healthcare proxies can take to ensure loved ones pass their last days comfortably at home and/or in hospice when further aggressive care is inappropriate. Samuel Harrington, an honors graduate of Harvard College and the University of Wisconsin Medical School, concentrated his clinical practice at Sibley Memorial Hospital in Washington, D.C. He is now retired. The author of his new book is At Peace, Choosing a Good Death After a Long Life. And we talked about how he came to this topic.
I observed too many elderly patients die in the intensive care unit, thinking that they probably would not have wanted to be there if they had known in advance what the outcome would be. And during that 35-year career, I saw medicine evolve from a healing art into a commercial enterprise, while simultaneously my parents were moving from middle age into old age and then dwindling and dying. And putting those two things together, I matured from a highly trained physician who was focused on technical skills to somebody who came to appreciate that at the end of a long life, comfort care, meaning nursing care and emotional support, were more important than my technical skills and the sort of the medical industrial complex layering on layer after layer of technical treatments.
How did we get to this point? Because you have most people who say, yes, they would like to die quietly at home, and yet we have technology, we have aggressive medical techniques that can keep us alive and try to battle and work on invincibility. So how do we come to an understanding of what is right for us, what is right for the patient?
Well, what is right for us and right for the patient is the result of a discussion between the patient and their family and the patient and their doctor. And most people don't take the time for that. Most people don't spend as much time as they should at it. And so if a patient goes into the hospital without a plan to say no to medical care, they will be put on the conveyor belt of treatment, and will the path of least resistance is always to treat as opposed to step back and reflect. So I try and start the book with the concept of my father's vision, and even though we had had end-of-life discussions before he expressed his vision to me, those were sort of academic. Okay, yes, no, I don't really want to be on a breathing machine for any length of time. No, I don't want to be on hemodialysis, etc. But when we were talking specifically about treating an aneurysm in his abdomen, which if it ruptured, it would be fatal, he really didn't want to address that the options for quite a while because he looked at me and he said, Sam, why would I want to fix something that's going to carry me away the way that I want to go? And that was his vision. His vision was to die suddenly by refusing emergency surgery and taking palliative medications. And that was, in fact, that vision informed all the rest of our decisions that my sisters and I made with him and the very few that we made on his behalf as he approached end of life.
You write in the book that doctors crave making diagnoses. You also say that one of the purposes of the book is to encourage that a prognosis be recognized and discussed. Why is that forecast of the likely outcome of that diagnosis and plan so important?
Well, Doctors are trained to make a diagnosis. We crave it. We need it academically. And once we have a diagnosis, we can give a prognosis, but we don't usually do that. We usually hide the a terminal prognosis from our patients, or if we don't hide it, we simply overlook it. But if a patient understands their prognosis and understands the course of their illness, they will make better and more informed decisions about the treatments that they will either accept or decline. Having a prognosis is understanding your median life expectancy, and one of my chapters is that at an old age, the median is the message. You will not, people who have lived a long life and have are lucky enough to achieve an old age are not going to beat the median by any significant manner, and then if they know what the median life expectancy is, they can start making plans.
We were talking a moment ago about the of understanding of what a patient and what that conversation between the patient, the family, and the doctor, and having that conversation. As you say, often that conversation happens later than perhaps it should. In my own personal experience, though, and having witnessed this a couple of times now, I've also seen the wishes of the patient change. It's not always concrete, is it? It seems to be a moving target often, and I'm curious as to how you as a doctor recommend a family and even a patient deal with those changes, and because a patient can, quite understandably, change their mind.
You are absolutely right, and all I can recommend is that people keep the conversation open and follow the patient's insight and the patient's wishes, referred to as patient autonomy in the med biz. For example, my father did not want to prolong his life, and he looked after a certain point when he was basically bedridden or required assistance in every activity of his daily living. He didn't want to prolong his life, so he started cutting back on certain treatments. At this point, he was in hospice care, but he also insisted on having a flu shot because he didn't want to be miserable. Now, the likelihood he would be exposed to the flu living bedbound was very remote, but he wanted a flu shot, so he got a flu shot. And on a greater scale, your point is that sometimes patients will say they want no treatment, and then they will change their mind and ask for certain treatments. Yes, we have to respect that, and the only way to do that is to keep the conversation open.
When you look at just the title of the book, At Peace, and choosing a good death, that's different for everyone, right? So you have to understand, we all have to understand that, but it seems to me in reading the book that you also want us to really take a hard look at what we want for ourselves and to think about that. There's so much of this that is taboo and people don't want to talk about it, but it's something we should really think deeply about.
Exactly. Yes, a good death is going to vary from person to person. My father's vision of dying of a ruptured aneurysm was quite naive, and of course very few people would share it. But if we dissect a vision apart, we can find that the attributes of a good death, the characteristics of a good death, have been well studied. And the five most important attributes are control, where the patient makes the choices, comfort, the absence of pain, closure, the opportunity to reconcile with family and friends, affirmation, the having a patient's values validated and affirmed, and trust, surrounding yourself with a comfortable environment. And I maintain that if you flip those, you get helplessness, pain, denial, frustration, isolation, and that describes death in the intensive care unit. So everybody may come at having a good death differently, and if a person wants to live forever or die trying, as Groucho Marx said, yes, that's your choice and you can be in the intensive care unit. But most people at an elderly age express an interest to go home. And it is fundamental, if you want to die at home, that you understand your disease well enough to say no to medical care at some point.
You're retired now. Tell me about your colleagues. How do you feel they do in this regard of working with families? If you had to grade them and give a state of the profession report on how they work with families in helping to bring about and to facilitate this good death.
Well, years ago I would have given us all a failing grade. I think we're moving toward the B-minus, B category. When I was in practice, I tried to steer my patients to oncologists who were good at talking about prognosis, although they were few and far between. And when my patient came to me from an oncologist who was bad about talking about prognosis, I would try and raise the subject. I think that there is a doctors are understanding and doing better at it. Many oncologists now will get board certified in palliative care also, and some intensive care specialists are board certified. But there's still a yawning gap between, board certified in palliative care, but there's still a yawning gap between the number of patients who really get good advice, practical advice. The number of elderly patients, practical advice is, it's just not done enough.
The name of the book is At Peace, Choosing a Good Death After a Long Life. Samuel Harrington is the author. Sam, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate the opportunity.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book is At Peace, Choosing a Good Death After a Long Life. The book is published by Grand Central. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.